there. It is Go West Young Podcast, your show about America's parks, policy, and public lands. I'm Aaron Weiss at the Center for Western Priorities in Denver, and we are all about Big Sky Country this week and next. Montana Senator John Tester returns to the podcast today, and the next week we are going to be live in Missoula. Our summer road tour wraps up on Thursday, September 26th. We will be at Imagination Brewing, sitting down with an all-star panel of Montana wildlife and public lands advocates, including a Montana state representative, as well as folks from backcountry hunters and anglers, Montana conservation voters, and the National Wildlife Federation. It is going to be a great conversation that is happening right before National Public Lands Day on Saturday, September 28th. If you are in Missoula, please come by to take a listen and say hi. The first beer is even on us. Again, Thursday, September 26th at Imagination Brewing in Missoula. We will start taping around 4:30 in the afternoon. Okay, before we get to the senator, a quick news update heading south. The Washington Post got a hold of an internal National Park Service report that warns that construction of President Trump's border wall could damage or even destroy nearly two dozen archaeological sites inside Arizona's Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument. The area records 16,000 years of human activity, especially around Quito Baquito Springs, which was an oasis on prehistoric trade routes. Despite the warnings, a Customs and Border Patrol official told the Post they have not delayed or altered their construction plans. At least a dozen Native American tribes are connected to the lands inside Oregon Pipe, including the Tohono O'odham Nation. The tribe's chairman says that the Trump wall would desecrate the area forever, comparing it to building a wall over your parents' graveyard. Our guest today is the senior senator from Montana. He is now in his third term, having won re-election on a pro-public lands platform that was the focus of many of his political ads last year. Senator John Tester, welcome back to the podcast.
It's great to be with you, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
We have a whole lot to talk about here, so I want to start by getting an update on a few specific bills and what you think the prospects of those bills are. You just signed a letter this week encouraging your colleagues to permanently fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Why is LWCF such a priority for you?
Well, I mean, it's the best conservation tool we have at the federal level. I mean, it just about every part of Montana has seen the benefits of the Land and Water Conservation Fund, whether it's through city parks or gaining access to more of our public lands for recreational purposes. And so it's been a program that has stood the test of time, been around since the 70s. And it's a program that has worked incredibly well and works incredibly well for Montana in particular in the $7.1 billion outdoor industry that we as Montanans get to have the benefit of. And so you got a program that works and you got a program that works well. We ought to be maximizing that program. And I think if there was mandatory funding, there could be a lot more work done, a lot more continuity within projects, a lot more predictability as far as the money that's going to be there. And I think it would be a lot better expenditure of taxpayer dollars. This program, LWCF, uses offshore oil and gas revenue, but it's those are tax dollars, and quite frankly, it would make a much more efficient, and I think we'd get more bang for the buck. So why don't we make government efficient? And one of the ways you can do that is have mandatory funding for the Land and Water Conservation Fund, as I said earlier, our best conservation tool at the federal level.
In terms of actually getting that over the finish line, do you think that there's a chance it gets attached to something that ends up in an omnibus spending bill, or you think it's going to have to pass on its own?
I think if it happens, it'll happen with a group of bills. LWCF gets a lot of lip service from folks back here that say it's really, really a good program. I don't know if they're saying that just for votes, if they actually believe it's a really, really good program. I believe it's a really, really good program. We're going to be pushing to make sure it happens. Budgets are about priorities, and I think this needs to be a priority. There are many ecosystems that won't be around another 10, 15 years. So I think now it's as important as it ever has been to fully fund the LWCF.
You're also pushing a local public lands bill called the Blackfoot Clearwater Stewardship Act. And what's impressed me about that the more I read about it is that this bill is really a model of what happens when you get ranchers and recreation businesses and conservation leaders all to sit down at one table and hash out a solution that, that works for them. I mean, was this a big process getting this bill to where it is today?
Well, look, Aaron, it started long before I was a United States senator, and these folks looked at one another and realized that nobody was winning. There was a lot of fighting going on, but nobody was winning. So they did exactly as you said. They sat down, and they started talking about what they had in common, and they found out they had a lot in common. And they developed this. I did not. They asked me to carry it, and I proudly did it, and I did it with not a lot of hesitation, quite frankly. And lands bills tend to be pretty controversial. But this was Montanans working together, trying to find common ground. Folks who in the past fought and argued and never were able to get anything done positive. But they came together and they developed a plan for management of our national forests in the Sealy area in Montana that can work, where everybody can benefit, whether it's snowmobilers or whether it's folks with a chainsaw in their hand or whether it's mountain bikers or whether it's hunters or whether it's folks who like wilderness. Everybody benefits. And would it be a bill that any one of those person in that collaborative would write? No, they probably wouldn't. But when they looked at it, they said, we got the final product. There's far more in here positive than there is negative. And we think it's ready for prime time. And in fact, it was. And that's why about 73% of Montanans support this legislation. To be honest with you, we need to get the other two members of the Montana delegation on board with this legislation. It's good legislation. It makes sense for Montana. It makes sense for our national forests. And if we can do that, I think it opens up opportunities in public lands and adds to that Montana outdoor experience that many of us live in the state for. And so it's a good bill. Like I said, I wished I could have told you that I wrote it. I wished I could tell you I brought the collaborative together. I did not. It started before I got in the Senate, and we kind of fine-tuned it once I got it.
Last time we talked to you, which was May 2017, you had just introduced your Yellowstone Protection Bill. What do you think the prospects are there of that or the Blackfoot bill getting, could we see another big public lands bill like we saw in January and get two public lands bills rolling up a bunch of proposals before this Congress adjourns?
Yeah, well, I do believe that. As far as the Yellowstone Gateway Protection Act is your listeners need to know, it's a bill that would have prevented large-scale mining at the headwaters of the Yellowstone River and on the doorstep of Yellowstone National Park, and we got it passed. We got it done, and President Trump signed it last spring. And I've always said there's places to mine in our world, and there's places we shouldn't, and the headwaters of the Yellowstone is one of those places we should not. And we got support. In the end, after the election was over with, we got the junior senator from Montana on board, and that's a good thing. And we got it passed. And I think it's the same thing with Blackfoot Clearwater. I think there's an opportunity to get it done. I think it's a good bill. I think it's a common sense bill. But we do need everybody on board. Nothing happens easy in Washington, D.C. It's always a fight, even if it's the most common sense slam dunk thing that's out there. And one of the things that helps move things forward, if you can get folks on board, and we need the rest of the delegation on board when it comes to Blackfoot Clearwater.
What do you think it's going to take? Do you know what the reticence is there from Gian Forte and from Senator Janes?
I don't. On the Yellowstone Gateway Protection Act, I can't say for sure, but Senator Dane jumped on board right after the election. So, you can draw your own conclusions from that. I know that Steve says he loves conservation and he loves public lands and he loves wilderness. This does all that, and I've asked him to be on board. He knows about this bill. It's no secret. There's sunlight been shining on this baby from the beginning, so people know what's in it. And I think, I quite frankly think it'd help his reelection if he got on board.
The big story at Interior right now is this attempt to effectively dismantle the Bureau of Land Management headquarters in D.C., even sending congressional affairs staffers out to places like Reno. I mean, from what you can tell, has anyone in Interior thought this out? Is there a grand plan behind any of this, or is it just a train wreck?
I don't agree with moving the office to Colorado or Nevada or even Montana. I mean, on one hand, you can look at this and say, you know, it's good to disperse government. I think there's another agenda here, and I think the agenda is to dismantle the agency and get rid of lifetime career folks who know the institutional memory of the BLM. I think that's very, very dangerous. I think it puts the management of BLM lands at risk, and quite frankly, when that management gets at risk, then the people who want to sell our federal lands or give them to the state, they have more legs. And I think that's a bad idea. I think giving the federal lands to the state or selling the federal lands is a very, very bad idea. But I think that's part of what's behind moving the offices out of here. They know the career employers are not going to move to Colorado, even though Colorado is a heck of a lot nicer place than Washington, D.C. This is where their kids go to school. This is where their connections are. This is where their roots are. If you want to do something like this, you do it over decades. You don't do it because you have a whim and decide this is what you need to do. If you do it over decades, you could possibly make it work.
So I'm going to guess you have similar thoughts about William Perry Pendley, the current acting head of the BLM, who had his first congressional hearing last week.
In a word, William Pendley is a train wreck. He's got a history of wanting to sell off our federal lands. He has got a history of irresponsible land development, particularly mining and drilling. He's not good for public lands. He's not good for the outdoor economy. He's not good for the things that make many of the states in the West the great states that they are. Look, there are a lot of people that live in this world. We can do better than William Pendley.
Let's go back to last November. President Trump made four trips to Montana last year to try to defeat you, and you then ended up, for the first time, winning re-election with more than 50% of the vote. Lots of your TV ads were focused on your defense of public lands. Yeah. Do you have a sense how much did that make the difference with voters?
Oh, I think it's a powerful issue. I think the people who live in Montana, who've born there, understands the importance of public lands. I think the folks who have moved to Montana understand public lands. I think more and more the business community understands how important public lands are for recruitment of employees. I think more and more the folks who are economic developers understand that when it comes to recruiting businesses to the state, not all states have the ability to have outdoor recreation like Montana has. So the public lands, it's pretty hard. And I know, you know, back in the 50s, there was an effort to try to sell them all. But the truth is that in this world, it's getting continually smaller. You don't have to be a millionaire in Montana to be able to go fishing or be able to go hunting or be able to go hiking. There's public lands to do that on. And I think that has attraction, and I think it has the ability to move voters. And it's not phony baloney. It's something that people really believe in. And all you have to do is get around this country. And I'm a little biased because I've lived in the state my entire life, and I was born there, and I've farmed there and ran businesses in the state for the entire 63 years that I've been on this earth. But there's no other state in the lower 48 like Montana. There just isn't. And it's because of the public lands, and because of those public lands, the outdoor recreational opportunities out there and the quality of life issues, the ability to have clean air, the ability to have clean water. It's all based on a lot of these watersheds and a lot of these public lands. So when it comes to elections, people have figured it out in Montana. And they understand that those folks that are out there that want to sell off our public lands or develop improper in improper places are not friends of Montana. And they're still, you know, you still have a certain percentage of folks that they don't care. But the truth is, I think the vast majority of Montanans do.
So you just highlighted a bunch of the ways that Montana is unique among the states in having that much connection to the outdoors and to hunting in the outdoors. But Montana is also experiencing climate change in a number of very visible and possibly unique ways. I mean, from wildfires to glaciers. What I want to know is, how is the climate debate then different on the ground in Montana than it is in D.C.?
You know, I don't know that it is. Climate change is a very, very hard issue because there are folks back here and there are folks in the state that say we can't do anything about it, so que sera, sera. There are folks back in Montana and folks back here that say if we don't do something about this, we're setting future generations up for a colossal catastrophe. And so it's a hard issue to talk about because it's not an issue that you can, you know, you can, there's a silver bullet to fix. It's an issue that is going to take take many different angles at. You got to have a lot of different tools in the toolbox to try to attack it. But my point on this stuff is this, Aaron. I think it's real. I've seen it on my farm. I've seen it driving across the state. I've seen weather pattern changes. We've been lucky where I live. We've actually picked up a little more rain than we have in the past, but that's liable to change because of this changing climate. And I just think it's really important we do something now because the longer we wait, the more draconian the policies are going to have to be to deal with it. And, you know, I saw President Trump on one of his reports here a few months ago that said, you know, everybody else in the world is polluting, so we ought to pollute too. That's basically what he said. He said it nicer than that. And I think that's very irresponsible. I think it's incredibly irresponsible. I think that I was always raised, my parents said, we want you to have a better life than we had. We want the world to be in a better shape when you, you know, when you're in business than it was when we were in business. I think if we're going to have a world that we can live in, and there's only one Earth, and I haven't checked to see if they've found something close enough where you can fly to outside this universe, but you have to have clean water, clean air. You have to have predictability. You see the typhoons and the hurricanes that are hitting different parts of the country. We're seeing erratic weather patterns like we've never seen before. We're seeing in our forest beetle-killed trees like we've never had before because we don't get as cold as we used to. We see in my neck of the woods in agriculture, we're seeing wheat stem stoffly that cuts wheat off. It's been around for about 10, 15 years now. Never had them before when I was growing up. So there's all sorts of stuff that's happening. It's costing us money. And if we could get policymakers back here in Washington, D.C. to understand that not addressing climate change is costing us billions of dollars every year because of the catastrophes that are happening around this country and, you know, the buildings that have to be rebuilt, the maintenance has to be done on the land, on our shores, I think it would put a different light on it. We don't have that kind of understanding back here that it's really fiscally irresponsible not to deal with climate change. It's really not. It's not something that future generations are going to look back on us and they're going to say, "Boy, you know what? That Senate in 2019, they did some really good work because we're not doing anything and we haven't done anything in the last 13 years that I've been in the United States Senate and Congress in general." With the exception of a few promotions for solar panels and wind energy, we've done nothing, absolutely nothing on climate change.
Senator, I think I heard a horn behind you, maybe calling you off to a vote. So I want to ask you one very quick last question. Since we're heading to Missoula next week, we're doing a live episode with four conservation leaders, including your former chief of staff, Aaron Murphy, who's now the head of Montana Conservation Voters. What do you think I should ask them during that podcast?
Well, I think it's hard to just give you one question. Number one, I would ask them what they think the biggest challenge is for conservation in the areas that they're working in today. And then once they told me that, I would follow up and say, "And so, how do you plan on solving that challenge?" I just think that in Montana and on this earth, it's an amazing place, the earth we live on. It's amazing. I was in the field last weekend and was working some stubble and got off the tractor. And it's, I don't know what heaven smells like, but by gosh, that was heaven. I got off the tractor, smelled that dirt, and oh my God, did it smell good. That kind of stuff doesn't happen by accident. Clean water doesn't happen by accident. Clean air doesn't happen by accident. Wildlife habitat doesn't happen by accident. Good fisheries don't happen by accident. It takes people working together, and even takes a few bucks to do it. And I think the folks you're going to have on next week are leaders within the state in conservation. But I'd really like to know what their priorities are, and that's what I'd focus on.
I will definitely ask them then. John Tester is the senior senator for Montana and a very good friend of the podcast. Senator, thank you for your advocacy and thank you for your time today.
Always good to visit with you, Aaron. Thank you very much.
Okay, that is it for this episode of Go West Young Podcast. No history segment this week, but don't worry, it'll be back next week in Montana. Again, we'll be at Imagine Nation Brewing in Missoula next Thursday, the 26th. Tape starts rolling around 4:30. Feel free to get there early or stay late and have a beer with us. And hey, if you enjoyed this episode, go leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend. And please keep the email coming. We do love to hear from you. podcast@westernpriorities.org. I'm very excited about what we've got on tap in October. We're already starting to think about November episodes. Send those ideas our way. I'm Aaron Weiss, and on behalf of the whole team here at the Center for Western Priorities, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week in Montana.